Right now, we get on board the G&M Family Market phone line and welcome back to the show our friend Bill Green of Bill Green's Maine, WCSH-TV, The Green Outdoors. He's everywhere. He's Bill Green, doggone it. Bill, welcome back.
Thanks, Rich. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Good to have you on with us again.
It's great to be with you. What's going on?
Well, we're enjoying a beautiful spring day up here, and I wanted to talk with you about what you're doing and what little spare time you have. You're back in baseball.
Yeah, I'm a assistant JV coach at Greeley High School. My son Sam is the JV coach. So we're literally battling every day whether we have a game or not. So it's a lot of fun. He doesn't like to practice. He just likes to play. And I want to sit there and do drills all day. So it's an interesting mix of new school, old school.
Well, that's awesome. It must be so much fun for you to be back out doing that.
It is. And it's a pleasure when you hear him doing a good job with the kids. And it's secret pleasure when you hear him say something that you taught him. I know where he got that. He got that running in between the pine trees in the front yard on Roaring Brook Road, you know, like running and then reach for the ball at the last, you know, rub with your hand out, you know, something like that. But Sam never liked drills. He always liked to play. So I'd have him kind of run a little, like a slalom course in between these little pine trees we planted. And then I'd throw the ball at some point. He had to reach out at the last second. I was working on that the other day. We're okay. We're 7-2. We're having fun. Our mighty Greeley Rangers have lost 4 straight, though, so they've gone from the penthouse to the outhouse in Western Maine B. And I've been looking, interestingly enough, at that Class A Eastern or North or whatever they call it, Bangor and Brewer at the top. That's like the old days. Bring out Punk Kelly and Ken Perrone, huh?
Absolutely. Now, are you channeling a little Bob Kelly in your coaching?
Oh, yeah. He's a throw strikes, play good defense kind of guy. And then I still think that's the fundamental of it. And, I don't know. What do you think about the Red Sox? I mean, I sometimes wish that they'd drop a bunt down once in a while. And I hear all these, what are the stats called that, the statistical system that charts more than average in RBI.
Oh, the advanced metrics, those things?
Yeah, saber metrics. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And I think, as you know, I'm an educated man, as you are, Rich. But I think the answer to a problem is only as good as the formula that you're using. And if you make up a formula for something and it's not a good measure of something, you're not going to get an answer that's meaningful. And so I think all statistics are interesting. They need to be integrated into like an overall approach. I don't even sound like I'm talking baseball, but you know what I mean? I think some sabermetric stuff should be. And I'll give you an example of what it all boils down to. To me, the Red Sox are an on-base percentage team. And what can't they do? They can't drive in runs because they disregard RBIs. And I think you've just got a bunch of guys standing on base every darn night. And I think a little bit of that is because of the approach that the club is using. So I still love the game, so watch it every night. Love to talk useless stuff like that.
But you know what? When you bring up a great point here, which is, when we were kids, you learned all of those fundamentals, and bunting was one of the absolute basics, and you'd take pride in being able to get down a good bunt. And now you watch guys being paid millions of dollars who don't know enough to get the head of the bat up in the air.
Well, sabermetrics teaches us that a sacrifice bunt is a losing play. That mathematically, when you apply that to baseball, you'd be better off to let everybody swing away, and so they tend to do that. But I just think there are times, even Ortiz, you know, when they put that shift on, just once a month, drop the bunt down the third baseline, just so there's a thought in the fielder's mind, hey, he might go that way, you know, or send a guy, you know, try to steal a base a little bit more frequently, just so that they think, you know, he might go. If you state, we're not going to sacrifice bunt, okay, I'll play back, and I'll play back with confidence. Just little things like that. I think, every time you get a single, you bunt the ball and, you know, play for a one-run inning or something. But I just think you don't leave out parts of the game, and that's the frustrating thing about the Red Sox. And when I fired John Farrell, here's my point. When Francona got done, I was kind of tired of him. I was tired of watching him chew. I mean, I think Terry Francona is a great manager. But part of it's the show, you know. The every so often the circus changes the clowns, and so if they brought a new guy in like Jim Leyland or something right now, why not change the show?
Yeah, it's a frustrating team this year. You know what's not frustrating though is every fifth day when Chris Sale goes out there.
Is that unbelievable or what? And it was interesting to watch him pitch against Tampa because every single guy was out of the box, and it was still only 15 seconds between pitches. So he's amazing. He's just, you know, he's Sandy Koufax good right now.
And I think they're okay. It's been a kind of a mediocre season, but nobody in that division is going to run away with anything. So if they can get Price back and find somebody to play, I mean, I get the ghost of Joe Foy to come play third.
Me?
Well, yes.
I can play third.
There you go.
No, absolutely. I mean, geez, you think there's a guy out there that could hit 260 and play third base? But how about that?
I would like that a lot.
You know, they may pop a trade there. I don't have much faith in Pablo because I think once you turn 30, and I turned 30 33 years ago, if you're carrying weight, it's a real hindrance. And so I think guys can, you know, these cherubic players, cherub-like players, can do it in their 20s. But when you hit 30, you're just carrying a, you know, bag of fat with you as you try to run around out there. And Pablo, to me, has to lose not 20 but 50.
Yeah, easily. We're talking with Bill Green on Downtown. I want to talk about
you. Do I?
I
don't have many opinions.
No. But you do it. You have an opinion we want to talk about more, and that's your idea to set our clock straight with what you're calling vacation saving time. Is that it?
Yes. And I respectfully ask everybody to just consider from now until, you know, Labor Day or now till August 15th what their lives would be like if the sun went down an hour later, came up an hour later, went down an hour later. I want to go to Atlantic saving time, which I call vacation saving time. And I just, you know, it's not a Republican thing. It's not a Democratic thing. I just think it would be a great thing for Maine. And the reason I think that is because we're a recreation state. You could get out of work at 5 o'clock, play 18 holes of golf over at the Muni. You know, you could ride your bike after you get off the air, Rich. You could garden. You could finally do some work on the house in the evening. You know, we'd have light until almost 10. And the reason I'm, you know, the more I've thought about it down through the years, the more convinced I am that it's singularly the best thing that we could do for the Maine economy. When John was governor, there was this big study about tourism in Maine, and tourists love the state of Maine, but there's nothing to do here at night. So why not extend daytime? And, of course, I'm getting all kinds of pushback from people. You know, the ones that I'm almost intolerant of, I can't turn the clock's head twice. I can't, you know. I mean, don't you ever go to, like, you know, New Brunswick, or don't you ever go to Chicago? Or, you know, it's not, to me, that big a deal to turn the clock. So I'm insensitive to that, I guess. But I think if we could get out another hour from daylight saving time and build another hour of light, and I think it's the singularly best thing we could do for the state of Maine, and I'm seriously pushing it. If I retire, I'm going to try to do an initiative, and I'm just going to try to get it done. Now, that's different from what the legislature looked at seriously,
right,
which was daylight saving all year round. That disconnects us in the morning from the rest of the country, which my program would do in the evening. It would do in the morning, but it would have more kids going to school in the dark, and I think we need to not have that. I think we need to start with what the kids do, you know, get them to school as safely as we can. But in the summer, already it's light well before 5 o'clock. It's 4:30, it's light. And the sunrise is getting pretty close to 5 by now. I should have checked it before I was on. And sunsets at 8. In fact, I think sunset one day this week was 5:08 and 8:08 this week. So we're at 15 hours. Why not take that hour between 4:30 and 5:30? It would still be light at 5:30 and have it light until 9:30 in the evening.
I love that.
As we get out of school and, you know, get with our families, I just think it'd be a great, just an hour to sit on the deck and think about how darn bad the last winter was.
I've already got a text in from a listener. Bill is right and always one of the best guests. 2 for 2.
That's kind.
Well, can you imagine what that would have been like, though, when we were kids, back in those Chapin Park days, if you were out there running around till 10 at night?
Keep the parks open till 9 instead of 8, right? I mean, yeah, well, and there would have to be some adjustments. I even, you know, even think the idea that you couldn't run power tools after 9 would be a good, you know, I'm not for, you know, staying up all night and banging around. I'm just for enjoying a little sunlight. And the other thing, Rich, this is interesting to me. There was a professor somewhere out near Pittsburgh, I think it was Allegheny College, that developed a very sophisticated service in the 1870s and 80s when light was set. We set time based on noon in your town. So when the sun was highest in the sky on the solstice, that was noon. They sent the clock on City Hall and the Unitarian Church and, you know, probably down at the train station, down on, you know, that they tore down. And that was noon. We all set our clocks by the big watch at Union Station. I couldn't think of it. Right?
Yeah.
Well, in eight, the trains were running pretty fast. Bangor would be like 6 minutes behind Eastport and so on as you moved west. They couldn't keep the trains on schedule. So railroad men, and as you all know, men are evil, they met in Chicago in 1883, and they standardized time. They simply drew lines on a map. You know, these will be the four time zones, and our trains will run based on these time zones. And they put us in the eastern time zone, but they chose Allegheny time. And that professor that was doing time, he would send a ping out on the telegraph every day at noon. So for like a few pennies a month, I don't know what the price of it was, you'd get a little signal in your office that went ding, and that indicated that it was noon. And you could set your clocks and know what time it was. And so when they standardized railroad time, they used Allegheny time for the eastern time zone. So
we had no idea.
We were doubly dinged because we're so far east as Allegheny time, you know, that we went along with the big cities. And when we were an agrarian country, community, it didn't make any difference. We were firemen. We're getting up at light and going to bed at light. But now we live a very different lifestyle, and we ought to change it. We ought to look into the future and change it.
I think it's fantastic.
I'm sorry to get on my bandbox.
No, I think it's a great idea. By the way, we thought of you the other day, may have even mentioned you on the air. It was the anniversary of the vote on the Andrew Johnson impeachment, and I remembered that I learned how that all played out from Bill Green's Maine.
Oh, nice. It's fun to, you know, investigate those stories, and, you know, I can name the seven senators. They were the Republicans that had to protect Johnson at that time. And of course, William Pitt, President of Maine, was one of them. But John F. Kennedy wrote a book about, I think it was James Grimes of Iowa, a freshman senator. No, Edmund G. Ross of Kansas, excuse me, who voted to save Johnson, and which was the right thing to do. I won't get too much into it. But it's fun to delve into those historical things, to learn about Hannibal Hamlin and, you know, I really have a great job, and I get to, you know, go around and do what I feel like doing.
We were talking the other day, one of my neighbors and an older gentleman in the neighborhood about great Bangor area athletes of the past. And I wondered, as a guy who grew up here in Bangor and was piped right into the athletic scene, who was the best athlete you saw as a young man growing up in Bangor?
Leroy Patterson for me growing up.
That's the name we came up with too.
Yeah, I was 9 when he was 18. But you know something else about Leroy Patterson? He graduated in 1962. My brother Tom Green was in his class. Leroy's birthday was in October. He graduated at 17.
Oof.
And I assume we knew the Pattersons, the Greens and Patterson. My brother played Little League with him, and we would sometimes. His father died, I think, pretty young. And we would give Mrs. Patterson rides to games in our old Chevrolet and stuff. And but I think perhaps it was a matter of money that Leroy went to school at 4. I don't know why. I'd like to. You know, I wish maybe his son knows that. Why did Lee start school at 4?
Mm.
But he was all state in everything, and he was a year younger than everybody. And we've all read whatever that book is, Malcolm Gladwell's. What is it about? What's the famous Malcolm Gladwell book?
Oh,
he talks about age and how people...
Right, with 10,000 hours of practice and all that sort
right.
of thing. Yeah,
all
yeah.
that stuff.
And Outliers, is that it?
Outliers. In the first chapter of Outliers, every sports fan should read because it's about anything from all-star Canadian hockey players to whether or not you should redshirt your kindergartner based on when they were born. And so Gladwell's at a hockey game to make it. And his wife says, "Look at this." She shows him the Canadian roster, and of the junior national team. And some high percentage, like 75% of them, are born in January, February, or March. So he goes down to the star of the team, who was born January 5th, to that guy's father, and says, "Tell me about little Johnny." He says, "Oh, he's always good. He's always a little bit bigger than the other kids." Well, when he was 6, if he was 72 months. He was 10% older than a kid born in December who was only 61 months.
Right.
You know, and he made the all-star team. And you know who his coach was when he was 8? Boom, boom, Jeffrion. And they went all over the province. They played 82 games. And pretty soon you see, no, he wasn't necessarily that good. He was just older.
Now,
right?
You're
10% older. And if you apply that to academics, Rich, if you've got a fifth grader
and
one outperforms the other by 10%, one's in the A group and one's in the B group, and you're branded for life. So it's an interesting discussion, especially for those of us who were born in September and October and stuff. But Leroy Patterson's birthday, I think, was October 27th. So, so that's really another thing about Lee. Another great athlete is Paul McCartney.
Yes.
Paul McCartney was a great athlete. Just great, you know. So maybe those two guys. And then I kind of drift out of it. But in the 60s and 70s, I'd say those two.
And you must have remembered, as I do as a kid, fondly going to watch summer baseball and seeing teams like the Bangor Merchants play.
Oh, yeah. I was a bat boy for, like, the Comrades against the Merchants. You know, they'd have some showdowns with the Legion team playing the Merchants. I don't know how that happened. You know who... Roger Reed put the Merchants team together.
Right.
And here's this, I like Roger a lot, devout Baptist guy, and he'd go crazy on umpires and stuff. I mean, it was wonderful, you know, those warm summer nights. Geez, it'd be nice to have an extra hour of light. And, you know, and just all those good players, you know, Jimmy Cameron would come up, and Leroy Carlton, Willie played for the Merchants.
Yeah, remember Ronnie Soucy out of Babs? My goodness.
Yeah. You know, Ronnie Soucy told me one time that when he was in high school, he knew he was going to Holy Cross because he was kind of being told by his parents and the administration that he had to go to Holy Cross. But a guy came up to scout him named George Bamberger, who later managed the Milwaukee Brewers, but he was a scout for the Orioles at that time. And he said, I was being cocky, and I knew I wasn't going to sign. And somebody big like Jim Palmer just signed for $100,000. And Ronnie said, Bamberger said, Ronnie, we'd like to talk to you about signing with the Baltimore Orioles. And Ronnie said, well, I'm not even going to talk to you unless you're talking $100,000. And Ronnie said, he didn't say anything about he's going to offer me $100,000, but he said, Ronnie, we'd like to talk to you. So, you know, I mean, maybe it was just blowing it off as some cocky kid, but he didn't slam down the phone and hang up when he said it. But interesting. Ronnie Soucy was great. You know, we had a kid at Greeley named Ryan Twitchell. He's going to Rhode Island on a full boat. He had an 18-strikeout perfect game a couple weeks ago. Oof. And there was a ground ball to second and two bunts that he fielded himself. And Ronnie Soucy had a game where he had, you know, 15 or 16, 17 strikeouts. And Ken Perrone was telling the team in between innings when Ronnie went up to hit, if they bunt, let me get this right, give him a hit because I want him to get 21 strikeouts. And I think he struck out 19 or 20, and it might have been against Bangor.
I think he did that, and he may have done the same thing in college as well on more than one occasion.
Did he? Okay. That was just amazing that day when Ronnie literally almost struck out everybody, but a guy grounded back to him. I know that. And I don't know if he got 20 or 19, but I remember that day at good old Garland Street Field.
Absolutely. Hey, Bill, it's always great to talk to you. Thank you so much for making time with us. And we love your idea of vacation savings time, whatever we can do to spread the word.
You've done enough already, Rich. Thanks so much.
And good luck to your baseball team the rest of the season.
Thank you. Thank you. No playoffs at JV level, so we're just playing it out in the next week.
All right. Well, we wish you luck. Enjoy that as well. Thanks for making time for us, and we'll do it again before too long.
Love to, Rich. Anytime.
Thank you, Bill.
Yep.
That's Bill Green, WCSH-TV, Bill Green's Maine, here on Downtown.